So, good afternoon. Let's start. Welcome to week 8. End of week 8. More than halfway through. Okay. And it's the second lecture on syntax, on grammar and syntax. It's the second of 4. So you'll get 2 more before Christmas, and then the Christmas present is going to be that we're going to change over to semantics or something like that. Okay. I don't have many announcements to make. Please remember the trial lectures next week. I don't think I've done that yet, but I'll upload the schedule for you to look at next Wednesday, next Thursday. 7 out of the 8 people who have applied for the job will be giving a presentation, a trial run, well, a mini lecture, and you're all welcome, as you know. Some of them are actually going to happen in this room because the one that we wanted to have was no longer available. So there's enough space for all of you to be here. Remember the assignment. Deadline is on Tuesday at 11, if I remember correctly. Some people have handed it in. My spies tell me that many of you are not happy with the assignment, in the sense, what does it have to do with the lecture? Well, nothing immediately, but that's partly the idea, as I said before, because it's supposed to give you this sort of studied and transferable skills. And it does have to do with a lecture in the sense that it is an introduction to linguistics, and you are supposed to, if you do it, I know some of you just hear, oh, my friend said it's X, okay, I'll just put X. Well, you're adults, up to you, I don't mind. If you do the assignment, then you're supposed to be exposed to something that might be helpful in linguistics for you, so that's why I did it like that. I know, there is a certain level of tediousness involved in this, but that's a way of making you do certain things that you wouldn't do otherwise, I guess. So, right, what did we do last lecture? Today's probably going to be a full lecture in the sense of that I need all the time. So, brace yourself. But there will also be, I may be wrong, there will also be some opportunities for you to practice. I'd like you to look at some more sentences with me. Throughout the lecture, I'm going to give you the opportunity to apply what I'm saying, or at least to think ahead and then see whether you can confirm what I will be telling you. In the last lecture, I introduced some basic terms, and I'm going to revisit these terms again in this lecture. For example, I introduced the term phrase, and we looked at different phrases, noun phrases, verb phrases. I'm going to mention that again today, and in fact in more detail. I also introduced the term clauses, and I'll give you another definition, and we'll count clauses, and we'll try to see what the difference is between clauses and phrases. I also introduced you to syntax trees, and the point that I made there was that hierarchy is extremely important in syntax. Things are contained within other things which are contained in yet other things, and the difference between the structure that a tree has will, and we haven't seen this yet, but we will definitely see this next week, will have an impact on the meaning of the sentence. And then I introduce the term constituent as the thing that sort of hangs off one particular node. Everything that's dominated by a node is a constituent, and if you want to move it, then you need to move everything that's under this node rather than just single words. And we'll practice that again today. In fact, I'll give you 4 different tests to determine constituency. And basically I've said it already, but one of the points that I made is that phrases can contain clauses, which again can contain more phrases, etc. So it's all about things being embedded into other things, and we can have fairly complex constructions in sentences. We'll look at that in more detail. Today, more on phrases and clauses, as it says in the title. What exactly is a phrase I would like to tell you? I would like to give you ways of determining phrase boundaries, more on clauses, more practice. And I will also come back to the distinction between adjunct and complement, which is something that you needed to know for the exercises that I uploaded. And perhaps I wasn't clear enough last lecture. Again, this I will come back even more to that next week. So by the end of the four lectures, you'll know the difference between adjuncts and complements, I'm sure. Next week, we'll look at specific types of phrases in a bit more detail, particularly noun and verb phrases. And we'll also look at variation, which is a major topic for next semester, but I'd like to introduce a few concepts already. Now, perhaps by now you're feeling a bit like these people here. I miss the good old days when all we had to worry about was nouns and verbs. We're going to be concerned about noun phrases and verb phrases and lots of other things. But we've moved on from this Stone Age, so that's fine. Right. As I said, hierarchy and structure are key terms. Just to illustrate this again with a very simple example, the huge cheese factory. What does it mean? It means potentially two things, and that's a question of hierarchy, that's a question of structure. It could be the huge cheese factory, so a factory that produces huge cheeses, yeah. Or it could be a huge factory that produces cheese. And the difference is really only in what belongs to which other parts in the sentence, where the hierarchies, or how the hierarchies are structured. So, where goes what actually makes a difference in the meaning of that phrase. And I think that's something that you can very intuitively confirm. Ambiguities can exist in language, and often these ambiguities are structural. Let's return to the question of what a phrase is. A sequence of words shorter than a sentence, that's sort of a lay definition perhaps, or at least that would be the everyday meaning that perhaps we might be familiar with. But we need a more technical term. After all, we want to do linguistics. I've chosen one definition by Jeffrey Leach. There are others. You will have read the one in the reading as well, which should be very similar. A grammatical unit which may consist of one or more than one word. Okay. We'll return to this one or more than one word in a minute. And which is one of the classes of constituent into which simple sentences can be divided. Sounds more technical, sounds more academic. I think we need to look at this in a bit more detail. In particular, we need to look at constituent again. We also need to define the terms simple sentence. I'll do this later on in the lecture today. And we will also have to come back to the question of one or more words. Why should a phrase be just one word? Okay. If we take a silly sentence like Mr. Smith's donkey was working very hard in the factory, okay, then I think you could answer the question, what bits of the sentence would you so say go with each other? And this is not something that I would like you to do now in great detail, but I think you can feel that the goes with factory, Mr. with Smith, was with working, because they're both part of the predicator, as I think I introduced or said last week. Very sort of belongs to hard. In goes with the factory, but also with working somehow, right? Working in, working, yeah. The apostrophe S goes with Mr. Smith, but somehow also says something about the donkey. So, if we want to sum this up, then we could say that Mr. Smith's donkey seems to be a phrase, And the rest of the sentence is made up of two or three linked phrases. What is it, two or three? We need more advanced or clearer ways of dealing with this. And I would like to introduce you to four different ways that we can use to detect phrases. And these are tests. These are ways to reformulate the language of a particular sentence, or to move certain parts, or to do something with them to confirm your hunch that a particular set of words, or maybe only one word, is a phrase. And these four tests, and I'm going to go through them one by one, are substitution test, movement test, coordination test, and question test, sometimes called sentence fragment test. And in 95, 98, 99% of all cases, these should give you definite answers about whether something is a phrase or not. Language is never 100% the way you expect it, but in virtually all cases, this works. Okay, let's look at the first test, the substitution test. Basically, the question is, and I read off the slide, can we replace the candidate phrase, well, the element that we want to test for phrasehood, so to speak, can we replace the candidate phrase with a single word and have the sentence still make sense grammatically? Okay. Briefly, I mentioned this, I think, last time already when we looked at the slide with the tree. I made the point that I can take a larger chunk and replace it with a single word, if I remember correctly. If that works, it's a phrase. Can I replace the red bit in this sentence? Very easy. He, she, or it, well, probably it, because it's an animal. I'm just saying it could be any of those pronouns. It was working very hard in the factory. If I can do this, then this suggests that Mr. Smith's donkey is a phrase. In the factory, can we replace in the factory with he, she, it? No. But with anything else? How about there? Yeah? Okay. So, if I can say this was working very hard there, then this also suggests that this is phrase. Let's practice. I'll give you a few sentences and I would like you to find out whether certain elements are phrases or not. And the two sentences, no, actually it's more than two sentences, it's four sentences I would like you to look at. They are: progress is being made in challenging this problem. And I've underlined challenging this problem. And the question is it a phrase? My cherry tree is in full bloom. I've underlined cherry tree is. Psychologists mind their own business. And no matter whether they are right or wrong. Can you just come up with it for yourself for 30 seconds or 40 seconds? Can you come up with substitutions that replace just the underlined elements? Think about it for a minute. Progress is being made in
this.
Okay. The next one? Not really, right? No. Okay. So cherry tree is not a clause. Sorry, it's not a phrase. Psychologists mind that? Or, yeah? And no matter whether... No, okay. Easy. Yeah? Right. One way of testing for phrasehood. Well, there's no word phrasehood, but I think it makes sense. Okay. So that was the substitution test. Movement test. Basically, it's the same principle. Can we do something in the sentence, and in this case, movement? Can we move the candidate phrase? Can we move the element that we want to test for phrasehood? And can we move it to another location and then still are left with a grammatical, fully grammatical sentence? If that's the case, it's a phrase. He will set out his personal philosophy to the electorate. This is about a politician. Are these elements phrases? Can we move them? His personal philosophy? His personal? To the electorate? Or just electorate? Or just to the? Let's start with his personal philosophy. Mm-hmm. He will set out his personal philosophy to the electorate. Can we say he will set his personal philosophy out to the electorate? Yeah, sounds fine to me. We've moved the phrase to somewhere else. Good indication that it's a phrase. He will set his personal out philosophy to the electorate? No. So, it's not a phrase, his personal. So his personal philosophy is one, but his personal is not. Again, really quite easy. What about to the electorate? Can we move that? Well, for example, we could say to the electorate he will set out his personal philosophy out, but to his colleagues he doesn't have to do this. No? And again, we've moved the whole thing that is at issue. It creates a particular sentence structure that requires something else. I mean, it's some kind of contrast. But still, it's a grammatical sentence. To the, he will set his personal philosophy out electorate. No. Or, electorate, he will set his personal philosophy out to the. Obviously not. So, the last two are not phrases. They are dominated, they are not dominated by a node, by one single node, but there is more in the phrase that is dominated by the same node. So only to the electorate is a phrase. Again, I think quite easy. Third test, coordination test. Well, I'm sure all of you know what coordination is. We're combining or we're linking two elements and they're typically on the same level. And this is sort of a prescriptive rule in English that if we use and in a sentence, then we should have the same on both sides. The same, not necessarily in terms of meaning, but in terms of syntactic functions, in terms of what it does in the sentence. So this is usually done with complete units. And if it's a complete unit, then it's usually a phrase. I say usually because there are exceptions. That's sort of the 1 or 2% that sometimes just work differently. So if we can come up with another element that seems to have the same value or be of a very similar nature, and we can create a coordinated construction, then that suggests it is a phrase. Let's get back to the sentence, he will set out his personal philosophy to the electorate. Can we coordinate the bit that we've already tested for a phrase and basically confirmed it? Yes, to the electorate is a phrase. Mm-hmm. Can we do this? Can we coordinate anything with just the electorate? Well, We can, for example, say, he will set out his personal philosophy to the electorate and to the party. And the two red elements are both similar. They have the same structure. It's not the same meaning, of course, because it's two different entities. But structurally, they're the same. They're on the same level, hierarchically. That works well. They're both phrases. In fact, we can also say to the electorate and the party. Hierarchically, we're on a lower level. But it's still coordination of two similar things. So both seem okay. Therefore, they're both phrases. Right? He will set out his vision of the good society. Again, a politician, I guess. Is out of, no, sorry, out his, a phrase, and you can intuitively already say no, but we need to confirm this. For example, he will set out his and up their vision of the good society. Well, I've tried to coordinate things that are on the same level or have the same type of structure, but the result is rather... No, doesn't work. Yeah? So, out his is not a phrase. Right, we have three tests so far. The fourth one is the so-called question test, or sometimes sentence fragment test, as I said. This is often one which is more difficult to carry out or to implement, or sometimes the results are not 100% convincing, but nevertheless, it's one of the standard tests usually mentioned. Again, if it works, it's a phrase. Let's stick to the sentence. He will set out his vision of the good society, and we can now test whether his vision of the good society, or just the good society, or his vision are phrases. Just out of curiosity now, who thinks that his vision is a phrase? Okay, a few people put up their hands. Who thinks that it's not a phrase? Okay, some fewer people, and the others don't know yet. Good, we'll see. Because his vision sounds, it feels a bit like a phrase, doesn't it? It belongs together. Well, let's have a look. He will set out his vision of the good society. What will he set out? His vision of the good society. So his vision of the good society is a phrase. What will he set out his vision of? The good society. I find that, wasn't there a native speaker in the room? Can you identify yourself, or have you gone? No, okay. I find this slightly problematic. Okay, some people accept it. Yeah. What will he set out of the good society? His vision? No. What will he set out the good? What will he set out of the good society, his vision? That doesn't work. Now that suggests, I've got the here again, that suggests that his vision is not a phrase. Why? Because his vision of the good society is a phrase. The whole thing is dominated by one node. Now, of course, you might have a different sentence where his vision is a perfect phrase. His vision was impaired. Of course, his vision is a phrase there. But in this sentence, his vision alone is not a phrase. Because the bit that follows it is part of the phrase. If you haven't understood this, listen to it again, try to work it out. There will be other opportunities to understand it. Right, those were the four tests. And again, I don't expect you to know all of these tests by heart in the sense of being able to name them. But if you are given the task of finding out whether something is a phrase or not, you should be able to apply a few of them and be able to use them. Yeah. In the first year exam it's difficult because I need to test some knowledge of definitions, etc. But in the long run, I'm much more interested in you being able to apply things rather than to tell me definitions that you learned by heart. Okay, let's return to the question of one-word phrases, because in a way that sounds like a contradiction in term. If it's a phrase in the lay term, in the lay sense, then it's typically longer than a single word. Mm-hmm. How can a word be a phrase, syntactically speaking? Well, okay. Yeah, you want?
The imperative?
That's not what I mean.
Like,
well, you can say go, yes, right. And yes, you would be right, that would be a verb phrase as well, but that's not the only explanation. Okay, that's one possible one, yes. Let's look at the sentence again. Mr. Smith's donkey was working very hard in the factory. Well, let's name that animal and say it's Theodore. Okay. Theodore was working hard in the factory, in fact, very hard. And you can see that those two elements which are bracketed are performing the same function, subject. In one case, it's just one word. And in the other case, it's a more complex structure. This is a noun phrase. This is a noun phrase. But a noun phrase just consisting of one word. In fact, he was working, or it was working very hard in the factory. Mm-hmm. So if the same function in the sentence is performed by only one word, and we can move this word to other places, or substitute it, well, it's a phrase. Because it confirms, or it conforms to all, or it, you can apply all the tests. Mr. Smith's donkey was working very hard in the factory. Smelt. Mm-hmm. One word. Mm-hmm. Smell is a verb that doesn't require anything else. It's a verb phrase. In that same slot, we can have much more than just one verb, but it is possible to do it just with one verb. And therefore, it doesn't make sense to say, this is a verb phrase, but this is not, this is just a verb, because structurally, on one level, if you look at the hierarchy, it's the same. And that's why the definition is a grammatical unit which may consist of one or more than one word. Because it's the unit that we're concerned about and the function this unit has in the sentence. Just to illustrate this in more detail, Eric was very unhappy. Poor Eric. Eric is in fact a hedgehog. Eric the hedgehog was very unhappy. Eric the giant bristly hedgehog was very unhappy. Good old Eric, the giant bristly hedgehog, was unhappy. We always have Eric. That is consistent, but we start with one word and we extend the noun phrase. The function of what is in red is always the same. Subject. In the first case, it's just one noun. In the last case, it's many more words. But on one level of the hierarchy, it's the same, namely on the top level. And this word Eric here is the head word. This notion is something that goes through the different types of phrases. When we talk about phrases, then we talk about noun phrases, verb phrases, adjective phrases, etc. And that's because the head word, the one that you cannot delete, the one that you cannot get rid of, If you have Eric the unhappy hedgehog, then you can just talk about Eric. Okay, so it's not the best example because you can also talk about the unhappy hedgehog. The very happy student with long hair. You need the student. You can remove very happy, you can remove with long hair, but you always need the word student in order to have the noun phrase. Okay. The other elements are modifiers. Pre-modifiers or post-modifiers. And the type of head word is important in determining whether it's a noun phrase or an adjective phrase or a verb phrase or in fact an adverb phrase or a preposition phrase. Okay. So the most important element in a phrase is the head word. A quick look at noun phrases to make one point which I may have, I can't remember anymore, briefly mentioned in the last lecture already. What is he? Is a noun. No, sorry, is a pronoun. Well, you could say it's kind of a noun. Or at least you find it in the same slot where you would find a noun. And that's why it makes sense to call it a pronoun, doesn't it? Well, his vision. Vision is a noun, clearly. And the good society contains a noun as well, namely society. Can I replace the good society with a pronoun? Yes. Okay. For example, in the sentence, Gordon Brown will speak to the electorate, I can say he will speak to them. He replaces Gordon Brown, and them replaces the electorate. What is the electorate? A noun phrase. So why is a pronoun called a pronoun? It's not really a pronoun, it's a pronoun phrase. She didn't want any. So in a way it's a misnomer. Pronouns don't exist. Well, they do, because we call them that way. But really what pronouns do is that they replace whole noun phrases. Okay, that was a few words about the noun phrase, and I'm going to a few other phrases. The adjective phrase. The very old man was happy. We've got two adjectives, old and happy. Notice that they are on two different sides of the verb. The very old man, well, it's before the verb, and the other one is after the verb. I will come back to that. Why is very old an adjective phrase? Well, it's an adjective phrase because if I leave it out, if I just leave out old, sorry, then I end up with the very man was happy. And I think I briefly mentioned this last week already. Well, you can sort of say the very man, but then that's a completely different meaning. This was the very man I wanted to see. Okay, but this is not because you removed old. If you remove old, you need to remove at the same time very old. Because both very and old are dominated by the same node. So you can say the man was happy, but you can't say the very man was happy. And that's the reason why, because it's dominated. Both are dominated by the same node. And again, that's why it makes sense to say that even one single adjective is an adjective phrase. Preposition phrase, sometimes you will find preposition null phrase, depending on which book you read. Now, prepositions typically don't stand on their own. Typically, prepositions have things that go with them. In fact, some people call them complements of a preposition. So if we have got the word after, which is a preposition, then we need something that goes with it, in this case, 12 days. in considerable trouble, through dreadful adversity, outside the jurisdiction of the United States law. Sorry, didn't read my slide properly. Okay. So all of these are prepositions, and those together are preposition phrases. I've bracketed the thing that complements them, that completes them. The form of these is, in all cases, a noun phrase. So the whole thing together is a preposition phrase, and it consists of the head preposition, the head word preposition, and a noun phrase. And in fact, down here, in the last case, we have a more complex structure again, because it consists of a preposition phrase containing a noun phrase, which itself contains another preposition phrase that also contains a noun phrase. Hierarchy is everything. Mm-hmm. And if you want to remove outside the jurisdiction, you need to remove of United States law as well, because the whole thing together is a phrase. Okay, verb phrases, we have different definitions, and in the reading it made that clear in the chapter. There are some people who look at sort of the longer version, and then there's the short version of the verb phrase. I'm going to stick to the longer one, saying that the verb phrase contains everything in the predicate. Yeah, so the verb and the complements, plus maybe some optional modifiers. Sometimes that's only one single verb, like I smoke. I like cheese. We've got the huge cheese factory again. Where like cheese together is the verb phrase, because like is the kind of verb that requires something to be liked. My sister married a German man in Rome last year. In Rome and last year, circumstantial information that we don't really need for a grammatical sentence, but it's part of the verb phrase. And I introduced the term predicate already. We'll work out what's necessary and not. Well, I sort of already said that in Rome last year is not necessary. And that's where the distinction between complements and adjuncts comes in. Right. That's sort of the end of the first part of the lecture, which leads me to a first conclusion. Not time to wrap up yet. Okay. What have we seen so far? This has been about phrases. One or more words, and they belong together in the sense that they are dominated by one node. We can test for constituency, for phrasehood, in various ways, including those four tests. There are a few more, but these are the standard ones. There are different types of phrases, and there's always a head word, and that determines the name. So we've got noun phrases, verb phrases, etc. So we use phrase structure. Where are the boundaries to determine or to describe the structure of a sentence? Right. So that's enough on phrases at the moment. We need to move on to clauses. There will be a moment for you to practice in a minute and to have a quick break. But not now. Okay, if you let me continue, then I will tell you more about clauses. A grammatical unit that includes at minimum, a predicate and an explicit or an implied subject. This is perhaps a bit too technical, but we'll return to it in the end. What it basically means, typically a noun phrase and a verb phrase. And I say typically because there are many other ways of doing this. Remember I introduced the rank scale. We're now one level higher up. We had words, phrases, now we're at the level of clauses, and the level beyond this is sentences. And all those four levels have to do with syntax. Very importantly, and this is something that might come in handy when you do the exam, because I tend to ask a question that relates to this, a clause in 99.9% of all cases includes a verb, or contains a verb. So if I ask you how many clauses does it have, a sentence, then you just count the verbs, and nothing else, okay? And the answer will be very, very easy. So how many clauses? Sorry, I'm scratching myself here, but yes. You can do really funny things with these microphones. A colleague of mine in Gießen apparently once forgot it in the break in the lecture when he went to the toilet. That wasn't... So I've been told to always switch it off. When so I will try not to scratch myself anymore. Anyway, returning to clauses... How many clauses? Yes? Two. Okay, everyone had two. The girl heard. Heard is the verb. And I blew the whistle. That I blew the whistle is one part of it. And the other one is basically the full sentence. Which is higher up in the hierarchy? Well, the first one, because the first one includes the second one. Right? And that's why we call that I blew the whistle a dependent clause, because the lower one is dependent on the higher. We might even call it a subordinate clause, because subordinate refers to this, to the hierarchy of the sentence, in the sense that one is dominated by the other. Please. Right. You might know the term main clause, of course. There's another term, matrix clause, that often is used. Okay. You might hear the term independent clause. Independent because it can stand on its own. So, the girl heard that I blew the whistle, the whole thing is the main clause. And that I blew the whistle is the subordinate clause. Why is not just the girl heard the matrix clause or the main clause? Because I think that's what many of you will possibly have learned in school. That you sort of have a boundary. Here, this is the subordinate clause, and this is the main clause. Well, it isn't, because if you don't have a subordinate clause, you still need something for the girl heard to be complete. That's why it makes sense to say that the whole thing is the main clause, and it contains, hierarchically, something which is dependent on it. So, me is part of the clause. And therefore it makes sense to say that the whole thing is the main clause. We're almost halfway through, that's why I'll give you a small or short or a brief joke. What do you call Santa's helper? Today is the 6th of December. It's going to be ha ha ha. Subordinate clauses. Right, okay. There are not that many linguistics jokes, but this is one, and this is a very topical one today. This is the first time I think the lecture is on the 6th of December, so. Right. Leaving the joking, I'm getting back to dry types of clauses. How many clauses in this sentence? Paris is the capital of France and Kuala Lumpur is the capital of Malaysia? Easy? Two? Yes. Okay. What about hierarchy? You've got two clauses. Do we have a main clause and a subordinate clause? We have coordination, right? They're on the same level. In fact, we used this test to show that things are on the same level just before. So this is not a case where we have one being hierarchically subordinated to another part. They're on the same level. And we have a coordinating conjunction. And I've already said that the coordinator and joins things that are on the same hierarchical level before. And they could, and in fact, both of these could stand on their own. So basically, we've got three types of sentences. Simple sentences, compound sentences, and complex sentences. Complex, because they contain subordination. Any sentence which contains a hierarchical structure where one is dependent, one clause is dependent on the other, is a complex sentence. Notice that length is not necessarily a good indicator of complexity. If you look at something like the sentence up here, this is longer. But structurally, it's actually fairly easy. What type of sentence is this? The old man's fantastically rich mentor traveled to Malaysia every year. Who thinks it's a simple sentence? A few people. Okay. Who thinks it's a compound sentence? No, it hasn't got an end. No. Who thinks that it's a complex sentence? Okay, very few people. Well, it's a simple sentence, but it's fairly complex. But the complexity is at a different level. It's not at the clause level. It's very simple in the sense that it's only basically a noun phrase and a verb phrase. It's just that the noun phrase contains lots of stuff, and the verb phrase contains more than just the verb. But in terms of actual structure, of clausal structure, this is a simple sentence. There's only one verb. So it can't be a complex sentence. Right, we've done phrases, we've done clauses, and I'd like to say a few words now about functions in the sentence. And I introduced subject and object, and then there are a few more, and in fact, I'd like to add a few more bits of terminology now. I've in a way already introduced this. Okay, it's almost Christmas. It's almost Christmas, but not quite yet. You still need 2.5 lectures before. And can I have a bit more quiet in that corner, please? I have been known to send out people. And yeah, so please, I don't want to do this. I'm technically allowed to do this, and I would feel terribly silly having to do this, but I've done it before once. So please, yeah. We're all adults, aren't we? Sort of. Okay, good. Transitive versus intransitive. I think I briefly introduced this in the last lecture. The girl stumbled versus the girl hurt me. One is intransitive, one is transitive, because the first one doesn't require anything, and that anything is a complement. And the second one is transitive because it requires something. And in fact, there are verbs that require more than just one complement. The girl gave her sister a book. This is a ditransitive. You can also call the second one monotransitive to make the point that it's just one element which is required. So once we have just me, and once we have her sister and a book. Or, just to spell this out again, no object, one object, two objects. Some people introduce the difference between direct object and indirect object. And in many ways this makes sense. It makes much more sense in the language which has inflections that marks the direct and the indirect object. In German, for example, or in other languages. In English, it is often enough to just say two objects, and whether one is or the other one is the direct or the indirect object is perhaps less important, although it is possible to say that, but it's perhaps less important than in other languages. And I just want to remind you of the fact that different verbs require different participants. The subject is always a participant, and then we might have a verb that requires just one additional participant, as in the girl hurt me, or as in the girl gave her sister a book. We anyway have three participants: the girl, the book, and the recipient of the book. What about today? In the girl stumbled today, or the girl stumbled in the morning. Or the girl stumbled gracefully, if you can do this. Some people can. All of this isn't in red, and that's because this is circumstantial information. It's not something that's required by the verb stumble. And that's what we've called, or what I've briefly referred to last time, and what I will be calling adjunct. Because it is adjoined to the structure of the sentence, but it isn't an integral part of it. If you draw a tree, it will be in the tree. But we can take it out and the sentence is still grammatical. If we draw a tree and we take out an element and it therefore becomes, and then it becomes ungrammatical, then what you've deleted is most likely a complement. So it's not an object. It's not something that participates in the action. It just gives additional information. So the girl heard me in the morning. Me is a participant. In the morning isn't. The first one is a complement, the second one is an adjunct. Sentence that I gave you before, but now with in the morning added, the girl gave her sister a book in the morning. Same thing. We've got two complements, her sister and the book, and in the morning is an adjunct. How do we show the difference in the syntax tree? I might be showing this to you next week, I don't know yet, because it's more advanced and it's going to confuse a few people. But then again, maybe some people are interested in this, so I'll have to see. Today I'd just like to mention a few more functions and look at what forms these functions what forms are realized, or which forms realize those functions. So now I've got it. Okay. It's been a long week, as I say, usually. Subject. We've seen this before, noun phrase. But we also saw that the subject can be realized by a whole clause. In fact, what's this? Under the stairs was a safe area during the war. What's under the stairs? Is it a phrase? No. What kind of phrase? Yeah. Preposition phrase. So we can have a preposition phrase functioning as subject. That's very rare. But it's possible. Just recently I heard it sort of, it's when you're a linguist and you tend to listen to things like that. Someone was sort of mentioning something and used a preposition phrase as a subject. And said, oh, that was a preposition phrase as a subject. It's very rare. And she sort of thought, what are you talking about? But that's sort of, well, what can happen if you're a linguist. There are a few even less likely options. But the point is, subjects are not always noun phrases. Subjects are often noun phrases, but sometimes not. Do we have as much choice with objects? Well, again, we've got a noun phrase, or in fact, a pronoun phrase in that sense, or a pronoun realizing a noun phrase. The girl heard that I blew the whistle. What did the girl hear? I already said last week that this is an object. What is it in terms of form? A clause. And a few other less likely options. Again, we have a prototypical case. Often objects are noun phrases, but in fact much more often than in subjects, we find subordinate clauses that function as objects. Adjunct, what form can adjuncts have? We've seen a few in the morning, quite cheerfully. Adverb phrase, in a rush, preposition phrase, I want to do this, or to do this, or he wants me to do it this second, noun phrase, less likely but possible, they will be cooking the meal when we arrive. What is when we arrive? Well, it contains a verb, therefore must be a clause. So again, four different options, and there may be a few more. Notice also in the sentence, the old man was happy. This is an adjective phrase, but that is also an adjunct in the sense that it is adjoined to the structure and not necessary. But that's a minor point. So basically, we have form and we have function. And remember that pretty much at the very beginning of last lecture, I said this is going to be a major distinction between form and function. And I'm going to put a lot of emphasis on this. I've introduced phrases, I've introduced clauses. And now we've looked at what they do in the sentence, namely subjects, objects, and adjuncts. Form versus function. The problem is there are likely candidates for what is done by a particular form, but there is no one-to-one correlation. Subjects can be realized as noun phrases or as clauses or as preposition phrases. You can't tell the function of a constituent from the form. You can tell in a tree, usually, but just by looking at, okay, this is a noun phrase, therefore it must be a subject, that's not possible. There are tendencies or correlations, but the only reliable approach is to do exactly what we've done, determine where are the boundaries, use the tests that I've introduced, determine what the participants are that are required to fulfill, well, to make the verb complete, find these constituents, and then remember that we might have very complex hierarchical structures. And all of this requires practice. And I'm now 15 minutes behind, not scheduled, but today I wanted to have the break a little bit longer. But you'll get a bit of a longer break as well, because those of you who want to do something during the, let's say, 4 minutes break, I would like you to look at this sentence. I would like you to tell me how many clauses there are, and whether this is a simple or a complex sentence, or a compound sentence. And I would like you to determine the elements of the sentence and the functions of them. So, are there preposition phrases, and what are the functions of these preposition phrases? Okay? So it's 3:15, and I'll start again at 3:19. No, not yet. Okay. Okay, that was 4 minutes. That was 4 minutes. Who thinks there is one clause? Who thinks there are two clauses? Okay. Who thinks there are three clauses? More than three? No. No? Yes? Okay, more than three? You need to rethink again. I count two verbs. Or verb groups, as some people call it. I think that we have the verb believe, and then, okay, the verb to herald is a relatively unusual verb, but I think you could, simply on the basis of where we would expect the verb, guess that could herald is a verb. Now, those of you who had three, may have been thinking about at the end of a long marathon of meetings. Is this a clause? Well, it can't be a clause because it doesn't contain a verb. Yes, it is a unit. Yes, it is a constituent. Yes, it belongs together. In fact, we can move it. But it's not a clause. What is it? It's a phrase. What kind of phrase is it? What's the head element?
Preposition.
A preposition. At. At the end of a long marathon of meetings. This is a preposition phrase. In fact, this is an interesting preposition phrase, or let's say a complex preposition phrase, because it contains various elements at different levels. Okay? Meetings is a noun phrase. Of meetings is a preposition phrase. Marathon of meetings, well, in fact, a long marathon of meetings is a noun phrase which contains as a modifier a preposition phrase. Of a long meeting, sorry, a long marathon of meetings is another preposition phrase, which is a complement, well, or which is modifying end. So this is sort of a preposition phrase within a preposition phrase within a preposition phrase. Okay? Hierarchy. Can we replace everything? Yes, we can just say yesterday. So the whole thing is one phrase, but it contains many more. Three more. Okay, let's look at boundaries and let's look at functions. Let's look at, for example, the object of belief. Belief is the verb in the main clause. You believe something, right? What is the object of belief? Anyone? Yeah? The whole rest of it, exactly. Yeah, and not just a peace agreement. Intuitively, a lot of people just say a peace agreement because that's the thing that follows the object. Yes, I can see why this is done, but in fact, well, use for example the substitution test. Believed it. What is it? Well, a peace agreement between Israel and Syria could herald an end to Israel's conflicts with our other Arab neighbors. And all of this is replaced by one single pronoun phrase, it. So the object of belief is all of this. What is the form of this object? Anyone? The function we've determined, object. What is the form? No one? Shall I just tell you? Okay. It's a clause. Yeah? It's a clause because it contains the verb could herald. What is the object of could herald? An end to Israel's conflict with other Arab neighbors. Yes, and not just an end to Israel's conflict. Yes, semantically, that's the most important bit, but structurally, it's everything to the end. So, all of this bit is. The form of the object, a noun phrase. Is it simple or complex? Well, I clicked too soon, it says complex. Why is it complex? Because it contains a clause that is dependent, or is a subordinate clause, namely, a peace agreement between Israel and Syria could herald, etc., etc., to the end. All right? This is the kind of analysis that you should be able to do. There are many, many more complex things that one could look at. This is not covered in Ling 101. But you need to be able to find subjects, you need to be able to find objects, you need to be able to say something about adjuncts. Is there an adjunct here? Well, there are many adjuncts. But what's, for example, at the end of a long marathon of meeting? It's an adjunct, functionally. It's circumstantial information. It's not required by any verb. This you need to be able to know. If I give you a sentence and I say, underline all adjuncts, this is a task that you should be able to complete. Okay, the final thing I want to say today. It's more on clauses. And it's got to do with the definition of clauses. Because it basically said so far that a clause consists minimally of a verb phrase. But many of the clauses that we saw, or actually all, if I remember correctly, had the structure subject predicate. Believed what? Well, a peace agreement could do this. A peace agreement is the noun phrase, subject of the subordinate clause, and believed to the rest is the predicate. But the definition of clause only says it contains minimally one verb phrase or one verb. And I'd like to show this to you on the basis of two sentences, because in fact there can be clauses that consist of only a verb phrase. The university expects its staff to know the rules. And the second sentence, we hope to see you at the party. Both sentences are complex because both contain two clauses. They contain two clauses because expect and know, and hope and see. Hope to see is two verbs. It's not just one verb group, even though they are very, very close to each other. We have two main verbs, hope and see. Sometimes verb groups can be very long, and that was also in the reading for today. Might have been being interviewed. It's five elements, and all of this in one verb group. But this is different. We hope to see you. What are the subordinate clauses? Expects what? Well, it's staff to know the rules. And in the second case, hope what? To see you at the party. By the way, notice that the verb that the subordinate clauses have is different in one respect, namely, we have an infinitive clause. That's why we call this type of clause a two infinitive clause. Notice also that there is no that. We hope that we will see you at the party. If we have a that, we can't have the two infinitive clause, right? So, what's the subject of the first subordinate clause? What's the subject of its staff to know the rules? Why should the university be the subject of its staff to know the rules? Isn't it rather the subject of the main clause? Yeah? Yes? Its staff. Yeah? Who knows the rules? Its staff, and not the university. The university expects something, and what it expects is the object, but the object is realized by a subordinate clause with a subject, its staff. Clear? Good. It's staff. What's the subject in the second subclause? Mm-hmm. To see. Yes?
It's the party.
It's the party?
Yes.
Sorry?
You.
You? Okay, who else? There was not any other options? Yes? We. Yes, but we isn't there. The party can't be the subject. But think about rephrasing this. We hope that we see you at the party. And you have absolutely no problem to say that we is the subject of the subordinate clause. Now, if we have this type of subordinate clause where we have a to infinitive, it seems to be possible to omit the subject. We know it's there. Everyone, even those people who said that the party is the subject, knows that actually who does the seeing? Well, we. Yeah? So it seems to be possible to have clauses without subjects, and that's compatible with a view that says a clause consists minimally of a verb phrase. If it's a subordinate clause, there doesn't have to be a subject. So, notionally the subject is there, but it's not there on the surface. And you can only see this if you rephrase the sentence to, we hope that we see you at the party. So, we have a subclause with only a VP, but it's still a clause. Let's draw the tree. We is a noun, or a pronoun of course, hope as the verb, and structure of the main clause is easy, noun phrase, verb phrase. The verb phrase consists of the following elements, a verb, a noun, which in fact is a noun phrase. At the party is a preposition phrase. I could draw the tree further and say that the party is a noun phrase contained in a preposition phrase, but I'm using a clothes hanger here, as we call it, or a triangle. All of this hangs together in the verb phrase. But there is no noun phrase, or whatever it should be there. Okay. That seems to have almost like, well, either moved out, or it seems to be the same thing. Yeah. It just isn't there. If we look at this bit here, then we have a very simple noun phrase, verb phrase structure. It's just that the noun phrase isn't overt, isn't there in the surface structure. But this itself is a normal clause. It's just that because it is part of a larger element or a larger complex sentence, apparently it is possible to delete the noun phrase. Okay. A point for those of you who are interested in more advanced stuff. Doesn't this look like a verb with three participants? See. What kind of verb is a see? Is it an intransitive, a transitive, or a ditransitive verb? I see you. Two participants. Subject, object. But doesn't this, from the point of view of the tree, look like as if the at the party was an element as well, because look, it's on the same hierarchical level. These are sisters. Remember that I talked about mothers and sisters last time? These are dominated on the same level by the verb phrase node. You can't see that this is an adjunct and that this is a complement. And it would be nice to show this in a tree. Maybe I'll show you next time. I'll see. So we've seen clauses with two infinitives. In fact, we can see clauses with ing. With words ending in ing. I mean, the verb ending in ing. I heard Jamie singing in the bath. Or Ray regrets buying a sports car. Again, the first one is with a subject, and the second one is without the subject. The verb is an ing participle. Jamie is the subject of the subordinate clause. Ray is the subject, the implied subject of the subordinate clause. In fact, you can have that kind of thing also for adjuncts. The streets being completely deserted, she took a taxi. What's this? The streets being completely deserted? Noun phrase, verb phrase, clause, a clause. It's a clause because it contains a verb, being deserted. Does it contain a subject? Yes, the streets. Standing on the table, Dawn addressed the crowd. Same thing. It's an adjunct. It's a clause. But we don't have a subject. Who stands on the table? Dawn. Yeah. That's not really difficult to see. But structurally, and those people who are chatting at the back, please either leave or be quiet. I'm getting more and more annoyed, and it was really quite nice for a while that this batch of student wasn't going to do the kind of thing that people usually seem to be doing in the first semester. I don't understand why you do this. It's not fair to other people who want to listen. If you don't want to listen, just leave. Okay? I'm not a primary school teacher. So, since everyone is quiet now, everyone can listen to conclusion number two. I introduced different types of clauses, namely main and subordinate clauses. I introduced different types of clauses also on a different level, namely whether they are simple, complex, or compound. And I made the point that elements in the sentence are required, and these I call participants. Another word for this, if we look at the verb phrase, is complements. And I introduced the concept of adjuncts as elements that are circumstantial or contain circumstantial information that can be removed without causing the sentence to become ungrammatical. And just sort of to repeat again, I made an important point last week, and I made it again today, namely that there is a major distinction between form and function, form, types of phrases, for example, noun phrase, verb phrase, adjective phrase, etc., or clauses, ing clauses, ing participle clauses, two infinitive clauses. All of this is form. Function is what does it perform in a sentence? Is it a subject? Is it an object? Or is it an adjunct? And I introduced different clause types, as I said, ing participle, etc., etc. I'd like you to do, for next time, if you feel like it, I'm not setting homework apart from reading, I'd like you to draw a tree for the sentence, Ray regrets hitting the old man with the stick. Be as specific as possible in the sense that don't use any triangles or clothes hangers. And think about whether there are different options of doing this. And think about whether this has an impact on the form of the tree, of the structure. And I'll start the lecture next week with looking at the tree. So you can either prepare for this, or you can't. Okay? And now you can go and have coffee and chat and be happy and enjoy the weekend. Okay?